The problem is the film festivals cost a lot.
Oh yeah.
Submit them.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's like almost even, it's almost even more than making a movie just to submit it to film. It's so funny too, because people don't talk about that. People never talk about how expensive it is to submit stuff to film festivals, like $50, $100 a pop, and then like can't guarantee that you can get in. And it's like, wow, I could have made 5 movies for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Welcome to the Dead Harvey Podcast. This is Brad Paulson. Today, I'm very happy to have with me Jason J. Cross. Jason, great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So you've made quite a bit of movies. I thought it was really cool when you reached out, because you've done so many movies in like so many animated movies. And I think that's a really cool approach. And this is something that we haven't really talked about a lot, is a approach that any filmmaker can make. And so let's say like you have a problem like on the set where somebody doesn't show up or something happens, or you have weather issues or anything like that. You can kind of correct that by making your own animation. So tell me about like, how did you get into using animation? Well, you've done a number of different things. Yeah. Because you write, you edit, you're an animator, and then you're also an author. So where did you find animation, or how did you get into animation as that, as a kind of format to use?
Well, I was still trying to make films. And then my wife at the time got pregnant with my daughters. And I knew that, you know, the easiest way was to do animation in order to continue what I was doing. Because doing things on set would have been impossible. It would have kept me away from my daughters, which I love my daughters more than anything in the world, and I didn't want to lose any time with them. So I came up with the animation. I actually came up with what I use. It's called iClone. And I accidentally found that just doing different searches. And once I found that, I was like, oh, this is a perfect path for me to continue and still be a father to my daughters.
Oh, that's great. That's a really cool idea. It's kind of like the whole, it's kind of like the whole work at home for thing, but for making movies on top of it, especially because I know you got like, you're busy full-time job, then you have family, and then you're making movies on the side and all that. So yeah, it's like, that's a very cool way to find the extra time to do that and then be home with your family. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's actually, it also, like you can do more in animation than you can on a live film, because your imagination is not limited to what you can afford.
Yeah.
You can create a lot more in animation than live action.
Absolutely. Like if you want to go to like, look, if you want to go to like the Spirit Halloween store and spend $50 on a werewolf costume, it's not going to look as good as if you draw it.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you have any kind of experience in animation or drawing before you got into that, or?
Well, actually, when I first started getting into filmmaking, I was using Flash.
Mm-hmm.
This is back in like the early 2000s. I started playing around with that, and then I went into live action. So I had a little bit of experience in it, but not really. But with the program that I use, there's so many tutorials online that I basically taught myself everything.
Oh, cool. How long does the learning curve, so if anybody is interested, anybody out there is interested in that, making their own movies and interested in that, how long does the learning curve take for learning that program, and how long does it take to actually make like one of the short movies, just kind of like on average ballpark?
Oh, yeah, it takes a while, because it actually, with the animation, I did an estimate, I actually takes me about 2 hours to do 30 seconds.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It can be more or less depending what's happening in the scene. But on average, yeah, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah. So how long did it take to learn all the tutorials and everything as well, too? How much time did you spend actually learning how to do the animations?
Well, not too much time. The iClone is very, very easy. I'm becoming a spokesman for iClone. They better pay me here now.
Right, yeah.
But no, it's actually a very easy program, because it uses video game technology. So if you play video games, then you can learn this really quick.
Mm.
So yeah, it's a very simple program. It's time consuming, and you don't even realize 2 hours have passed. But
right.
It's very easy.
Do you have to do something to match up with the, this is what I was kind of curious about. Do you have to do something to match up with the voice as well too? For the mouth movements on there or?
Well, yeah, sometimes I have to tweak it, but the program itself does it. And does it very well, but not like perfect. So sometimes I have to just take the camera and the program and put it right by the mouth and play it slowly so I can get the mouth movements right.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. That's great that you found that as a format. And so which one do you enjoy the most? Because you do live action movies, you do animated movies, and then you also write books and poetry as well, too. Which one of those kind of formats of art do you like the most? Do you enjoy the most?
Well, I definitely like writing the most. I have like all these notebooks because I handwrite things. I just sit there and start writing, even though most of it, you know, if you look through the notebooks, you'll see me writing, okay, this is not going anywhere. But I like writing the most. But the animation, I really like to be able to get what's inside my head on the screen, especially when you get to see in a film festival on the big screen. That's most rewarding to me.
Yeah, that's the coolest thing about animation is the fact that the sky's the limit as far as like anything that you could imagine budget wise. When if you're trying to do that in live action, you'd have to get permits, all these other kind of things to have the scenarios there. And again, speaking of which, you're based out of New York. So how user friendly is New York nowadays for making indie movies, getting resources there or trying to do like guerrilla film?
When I did live action, I didn't really do anything in the street. But from what I hear, that it is pretty easy to get a permit, that it's very filmmaker friendly. But if you're not doing something where someone's getting killed or anything like something that someone will call the police on, then you can do it without really asking.
Yeah. Or maybe doing something where somebody's getting killed, people will just walk by and not do anything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Probably should not laugh about that.
you probably could. And, you know, the police will come about a half hour later. Just make sure you film it and get out of there.
Yeah. Well, so many like famous underground filmmakers have come from New York, Abel Ferrara and Frank Hanelotter, and the list goes on and on. So it's a very cool environment and it just has like that whole quality to it, that whole like just that gritty and kind of indie feel quality about it it's really hard to duplicate with other environments. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you come up with a lot of ideas for stories. You have just tons of videos. Like, so anyone interested, check out Jason. He's got like a YouTube channel and then his Four Sides of the Cross website. And there's just like the YouTube playlist is like 134 or something like that, things to go through on there. So when you're coming up with your ideas, do you have like kind of like a ritual or a process for coming up with ideas?
Well, I like to always do pen and paper. So I have hundreds of notebooks. If I ever died and people try to look through my notebooks, they're trying to figure out what's going on. I don't know. Like, I don't have a system, but I basically just take a pen and paper and I just start writing. And some things work out where I can turn into a film, some do not. I'm actually trying to put together a short story novel with all the little things that I wrote that, you know, not good enough to actually make a film out of, but I thought they're pretty interesting. So yeah, everything is just pen and paper and just make sure I write all the time. I have the subway ride, I write there.
Yeah.
My lunch break, I write there. And I say about 90% of it doesn't turn into anything, but I make sure I'm constantly writing.
Yeah. See, I think it's kind of interesting because the more I think that like my imagination deadens the more that I watch TV, but the more that I read or the more that I write, the more I think it's like, do you think there's a truth to like the more that you write, the more ideas just kind of like naturally come to you or naturally flow?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, sometimes they where the last sentence of it is where this is not going anywhere, but sometimes it just comes right out. Yeah. If you ever seen my film Got to Eat, that was first time wrote it down the whole thing without having to go back and change anything.
Mm-hmm.
That one just flowed.
Yeah, awesome. How did filmmaking get into your blood? Where did the origin of that come from?
I moved to Long Island for a little while to get away from the city because I was just constantly working in my accounting work, and I just kind of started feeling like almost dead inside. But from there, I just started writing more because I took a job that was very easy. So like most of the time I wasn't doing anything. So that's when I started writing. And then I got into, I said Flash and made a little animations there. And then I got into, you know, regular filmmaking with Adobe Premiere. And then I met some people and we did some things. And I just, it just started growing from that, trying to get that quiet in my life. Because like I still do work for a law firm doing mostly accounting work. But at that one moment, I was just working from 7 a.m. to about 8 p.m. Yeah. And that was my life. And when I took a step back, I started feeling like I had this imagination that was being stifled because of all this work. And from there, then I just started like always making sure I always was writing something. Whatever it was, I was always writing. And now I can deal with the New York life where everything's going so fast.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there some movies or like just like a couple movies in particular that inspired you or that you've always kind of, or like you watched that movie and said like, oh, I want to make a movie after you saw it?
Yeah. Well, I was always into horror. Horror was like, well, maybe not when I was a little kid. My father, he hated Disney. So he made me watch Friday the 13th and stuff like that.
It's hilarious. Like,
the hell out of me. But about 10, 11 years old, I was actually reading Stephen King books. I just got really into it. But actually, a very funny story. No one's been able to tell me what this movie is. I only remember pieces of it. Mm-hmm. It was something about it was a bear. I remember one scene where a guy's running. For some reason, he climbs underneath the gate instead of above it, and it rips him in half. Another scene, the guys, they're all in this bunker underneath, and this guy with the bandage goes to look up the hole to see if anything's there and comes out without a head.
Wow.
Well, with that film, at the very end, you know how they do the horror movies, they show all the bears still alive as they escape.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. My father, even though I was crying, said, no, we can't leave. We're going to watch the sequel. It made me cry through all the credits.
It's holy funny. Crap. Yeah, funny in retrospect. Yeah, things like that are never funny at the time. It almost reminded, the way you're describing that reminded me of that scene in Beastmaster when like the young Beastmaster is getting the powers and that bear attacks somebody and like pulls him through the bushes. And then the Beastmaster kind of like goes out to tame the bear. It sort of reminded me of that. I think it's interesting mentioning that like there's the movie that you're trying to find, because I've had that movie as well too. I think, I don't know if all horror fans have this, but I certainly did when I was a kid. And there was a documentary about like the Shroud of Turin that we saw. And they, you know, back in that day, they used to have like these trailers, but they would have like, you know, nowadays you see like an R-rated trailer for an R-rated movie. But back then it would be like, you could watch like a PG movie or like a G movie. You'd see an R-rated trailer before it. And there was some movie where like these dolls were attacking people. Somebody got thrown up in a freezer and these people were playing cards. And these little dolls were stabbing them, but it wasn't like Dolls by Stuart Gordon. It wasn't like Fear of the Dark. I've been trying to find this movie, and it gave me nightmares for like 3 weeks when I was a kid. And I still haven't found this movie. I think it may be like an Italian movie or something, but somebody has to do like some kind of a service where they find these movies that people that like people are looking for their whole lives and they don't know what they are. Even with like the advent of streaming and those obscure movies more easy to find, I still can't find that movie. I have no idea what it is.
Oh. I feel your pain there.
Yeah.
People throw suggestions and I try to watch it. Like, no, this is not it.
Yeah.
And I know it wasn't an obscure movie because it was in a movie theater.
Right.
I saw it. So it had to be late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. I wonder, it almost kind of reminded me of, it may not be this one, but there's the cover of, you ever seen that movie Prophecy? Not like the Christopher Walken one. With the Angel's Prophecy, but there was like the John Frankenheimer movie Prophecy. And I think Talia Shire was in it. And there's this bear kind of like on a cover curled up like it's an embryo, but it's like a bear version of an embryo because it's a creature that's like a mix of all these different things. There was some kind of environmental thing. It was back in the 70s when they were making those like environmentally based horror movies, or some kind of environmental spill caused this creature, but it was like a mix of all these creatures, but it looked like a bear kind of curled up. And that freaked me out too, but it sort of reminded me of that a little bit, like that bear creature. They didn't really have the budget to show it attack that much, this sounds like something different. But if I find that one, I'll let you know, because yeah, that sounds like a similar quest that I'm on.
Someday we will find movies.
I'm surprised, you know, somebody could make like a fortune if they could start like a website or a service and find these movies for people.
Yeah, really.
if somebody sees this and they find this movie for me, I would be willing to pay like $500 if I could know what this movie is, just to fulfill that lifelong quest. But I still haven't found it. I went like on all the nerd sites. I asked all the movie nerds I know, and I still haven't been able to find it.
Oh, I know. I've been all over the place, all the horror websites, trying to find it. And unfortunately, those are the only scenes I remember.
Maybe it was something that didn't get released. You know, it could have been like this with the movie that you're talking about too. Maybe it was like a limited release, or it's just out of print or something. Yeah, because we did like an episode where we're going through all the bear movies, and nothing like that stuck out. But it's kind of funny because there was that movie Grizzly 2 that George Clooney was in that was pulled for a long time, and then they put like all these filler scenes in, and then they finally released it, but it was absent for I think like 30 years or something like that. But there are movies like that, but eventually, maybe before we die, we'll see those movies.
Yeah, maybe. And if somebody comes up with a service and starts making money, remember, we need a cut. We came up with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now for financing your movies, do you completely like self-finance anything, or do you have like a Patreon or anything like that where people help out?
I'm actually trying to work on a locals. I always did it all myself, but now with the economy being so bad at getting harder and harder, and the biggest expenses is getting into film festivals.
Yeah.
And I like this one particular Hunter, because my daughter, she's 12 years old, played the character that I really want that one out there.
Yeah. So normally, awesome.
Yeah. Normally I just do them because I like to do them.
Yeah.
No financial incentive at all. But now it's becoming like, everything's so expensive. If I want to continue doing this, then yeah. So I'm working on a locals a platform. I'm creating an ad right now, and we'll see where that goes.
Oh, awesome. So now, yeah. So this one, that's the background that I have here. You had a campaign for it on your site. All right, then we were kind of talking about this before we started recording. Are you going to do like another, are you going to launch like another promo for it, or?
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to, that one didn't work out so well. So I'm trying to learn from my mistakes and come out with the second one where, again, for this Indiegogo, I'm trying to get just money for the film festival so I can get that out there.
Yeah.
And of course, the better the film festival, the more it costs.
So yeah. Sorry to cut you off. You're saying.
Okay. That's okay. I'm just very happy with the way this one came out.
Yeah. And this is interesting to kind of delve into, because we were talking about this before we started recording. Also, a lot of what you hear in indie movies, like especially like indie movie success stories, or a movie was made on $16,000, like Blair Witch ballpark, or Paranormal Activity, I think was like right around 12 grand. But you never hear about like how Paramount bought the movie and put all this money into it, or how much like, so like you, if you got like $500 and you're going to make a movie and you make like the greatest low budget micro movie ever, and you know, it has the potential to win all these awards, but you don't have the money to put it in these festivals. That's something that people never talk about. So I think it's very interesting, because a lot of times, like I think like kind of on average, it may be even more expensive now. How much like when you're looking at submitting to festivals, are they still like around 50 to 100 a pop, or are they even more?
About 50 to 100.
Yeah. And
I actually, at one point, I was working at an entertainment law firm, and I got to see like things. What is it? The one in Canada that's really big.
Oh, Telluride or Toronto? Or
you think Toronto?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think there's one called TIFF that may be there as well, too. I think there's a couple.
Yes, that's the one. Okay. Yeah. That, since I worked for the lawyers, I saw like how much actually goes into it, because you don't go to these big film festivals without lawyers, because if there someone sees it and they want to, you know, like distribute it, you have to make sure you have everything right there and then,
right?
Because if someone sees something and they really like it, well, the two things I was always told, if they really like it, you better have some like an attorney involved, because if they're not going to sign you there, they're going to forget about the movie. And another thing, a producer will come up and it's like, what are you working on next? maybe because they want you something future. If you don't have anything, you're forgotten. So like, these are things I've heard.
It's like a strike while the iron is hot kind of thing. Everybody has a bidding war for it. But then, you know, if you're like a low budget filmmaker and you're like, it was all I could get just to get money to get on a bus to come out here. Now I got to have paperwork too.
Yeah. Then, if you're not ready. You're like, yeah, it costs money. You definitely, maybe not so much making it, but getting it out there. And then once it's out there to further your career, it gets very expensive.
It was funny too, because I knew people because I was in LA for a while, and there was these like low budget filmmakers I used to hang out with, and they would like, there was these one guys that would spend like $1,000 on a movie, and then they would spend $4,000 to $5,000 on the party, and then also for like festivals and stuff like that. So yeah. It's like, yeah, if you're gonna spend $500 on a movie, set aside $4,000 for festivals.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so weird. That's though.
The most expensive part.
Yeah, but I think it's very interesting to bring that up, because that's something that I never hear people talk about like about how much festivals are and how they may cost even more than the movie. I guess it all depends on how, but it's kind of interesting because too, like if you look at like what Hollywood makes stuff on, and their marketing is easily as much as they spend on the movie, right? So you have to like take like double the budget and then half that for like when the theaters take money. But yeah, easily they spend as much on marketing as on a lot of movies. But yeah, everybody just thinks about the actual budget to put into the movie. But yeah, it's a good lesson to give to indie filmmakers. Set all the money that you can set aside for things like this. Yeah. And
oh, yeah.
I think it's cool too that you talked about doing that as a campaign. I was talking to some other guys that did a campaign for this movie, this like Amityville NATO movie they did. And they had already shot the movie, but what they were looking for is finishing funds for things like festivals and post-production. I think that's smart because it also gets, so whoever's going to basically, like when you put it on that campaign where people are going to give you money, they can have more faith in giving you money because they know that you've already finished the movie. So I think that's a smart way to approach that kind of fundraising stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're going to put a budget together for a film, make sure you put in that stuff as well. Because that's the most important. You can finish the greatest movie in the world, but if you can't get it out there, then what's the point?
Yeah, absolutely. If nobody sees it, it'll be like one of these out of print classics, like we were talking about not being able to find.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. All right. So, let everybody know where we can find your work.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can search YouTube. That I have everything up there for Four Sides of Cross. You can also see me on my website. It's FSO Cross, Four Sides of Cross with initials.com. And those are the main places that you can find me. I'm up on other places too, like Rumble and all that. But most of my stuff's on YouTube and on my website.
Oh, cool. So now this is kind of interesting. Just talk about for a bit. For things like Rumble and Locals and things like that, are they fairly like user friendly as a filmmaker to kind of try and access and try and is it a way for you to be able to get patrons and things like that or just to like or gather a following?
Yeah, that's what I'm like researching now. So that's a question I'll answer for you another time.
Yeah,
I know I'm trying to go for Locals and Rumble because not to get into it all, but you know, there's a lot of censorship with Patreon and YouTube, where Patreon, if you say something off the website, doesn't matter, they'll cut you right off and you lose all your money. So I'm looking for a little more like Locals because, yeah, I say something stupid all the time.
So, you know, preaching to the choir on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I suffer from foot and mouth disease. Very bad.
Well, cool. Yeah. So I wish you the best of luck with that. That's cool. And I think that's great that you're checking out those other platforms because competition, I think, like is fantastic, especially if there are rules limiting people from free speech or whatever they want to do as a filmmaker, you know, as long as you're like not hurting anybody and having fun, you know, and making a movie, I think it's all in fun. And actually, I think this is kind of cool thing to bring up as well, too, is that. So I was watching one movie about where you were talking about how you got kind of some pushback because you're religious. And I think like and I thought that was kind of interesting because I grew up in the church and I've always liked horror movies. I was scared of them for a long time. But then like somebody, when I was in high school, they, they introduced me to some Stephen King. It was Stephen King book that had Rage and like The Long Walk, and I think the Grunny Man was in there, and I was kind of hooked after that. I think it was a way to kind of try and conquer my fear. Is that kind of how horror works for you as well too, or is there something else that draws you to it?
Well, what draws me to it, especially the movies, I always found the one thing different from horror movies than anything else is I find them interactive. Mm-hmm. Where you go, don't go in there. You're screaming at the TV. Don't go in there. Oh, you're dead. You don't get that with any type of genre besides horror.
That's true.
I
remember Stephen King was saying, like, people always ask me, like, why do people do stupid things in your books? He's like, well, if they didn't do stupid things, I couldn't have the book, or something like essential to that. It's like, you know, the story would be over in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I tell my daughters the same thing. It's like, you have to be stupid to be in a horror movie, because if you were smart, the movie would be over in 10 minutes.
I always like it, like, when they base horror movies that are like in the 70s or an earlier time period. So, because I think it's tricky now to get away with, you find it like it's tricky when you write to get away from the modern things like cell phones. Like, you know, if somebody's stranded and they could have a cell phone, get themselves out of a situation. Do you find that kind of tricky?
Yeah. Well, I think the best way is always, from what I've read and all that, since my stories have been pretty short, I don't have to worry about that. But I think the one trope they always do is that, like, the cabin in the woods, no signal.
Right.
But I notice they have to put that now in the beginning of the movie. Oh, I'm not getting any signal. I'm not sure why. You have to, because if they have the cell phone, they're resaved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was kind of, you just have to do extra work nowadays to, to make it, because now, like, we got cameras all over the place now. Like, it would be very difficult to be like a criminal or a murderer and get away with things like that. Like, they just caught that one guy that was Pennsylvania or something like that. He was only on the lam for a couple of days. So it's like, I could be a terrible criminal because my conscience, and then I'd just be paranoid about getting caught because anything could catch you now. That's why I think a movie like The Black Phone that took place in the 70s really, really creeped me out, because nothing like that was there to save people. You're really on your own and off the grid, even if you're in the suburbs time period.
That was a good movie. I enjoyed
that. That was a great movie. Yeah. That kind of got under my skin. I was like, this is effectively very scary. Mm-hmm. And Ethan Hawke, it's like, I've seen him in all these comedies. I'm not going to look at him the same way anymore. He did a really good job in that movie.
Great.
It was fantastic. We're seeing like a really cool, speaking of indie horror movies and time to make indie movie, I think this is a fantastic time to be an indie filmmaker, especially for indie horror, because there's so many cool ideas that you're seeing out of indie horror that right now. And especially with Hollywood crumbling, this is the real resurgence of it. It's almost like we're in kind of like, you know, that indie period where Rodriguez and Tarantino and Kevin Smith in the early 90s. I think we're seeing a resurgence of that now. Hollywood's going like this, and the indie stuff's going up like this, especially with streaming formats having so much stuff available everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And Hollywood, I've heard with the streaming service, that it's not a good business model. They're losing money like crazy. So when you're something as big as Hollywood, this is not a good business model, but for an independent, this is a great business model.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of, it's totally like the Wild West right now. Like, have you kind of experimented with trying any of your stuff on like Tubi or any of those formats where they kind of sell it for you?
That's another thing I'm thinking about. It's only because the financial problems now, but my past was like, you know, I made it. I did it. That's great. Next project. I didn't think about it anymore. You know, I send it to film festivals and all that, but it is a hobby for me. It's not, I'm doing well with my day job. And then as a father, I need that steady income. But, things like how they do Adobe now, where before you just bought the program and you're fine, but now they rent it. Since I use more than two programs, then I have to get the whole package, which turns out to be $60 a month.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's fine, but it adds up, especially at times when I'm not making anything, I'm still paying for the software.
I remember they were doing that with like Microsoft Office. Everything became like this sort of like a rental thing. Now, that's kind of the cool thing about Final Cut Pro is that they don't do the, but I think Adobe, I'm not sure which one is used more. But yeah, they don't do the actual monthly fee, which I'm sort of surprised by because they're tied into Apple. So I think Apple would try and exploit that for like a monthly fee. But I guess they make so much money off their iPhones, they don't have to try and do that with that. But it's tricky. Like everything, like all that stuff you used to be able to own, you have to all rent it now. Yeah.
Yeah. And the problem I always had with Adobe, I tried to cancel a couple of times. It was like, well, you have a contract, so there's going to be a fee for you to cancel. They really got you.
Absolutely.
I don't use a Mac. I use a PC. Adobe's perfect for me. And they are the lead. They're definitely the best in the business as far as if you're using PC. I use Final Cut Pro in school, but I always liked Premiere.
Well, you'll still probably save a bunch of money since their computers aren't nearly as pricey as the Apple stuff. And then Apple also, they change all the ports on everything. So you have to get the adapters for all this stuff now.
Yeah, exactly. They know how to get you.
yeah, for sure. Oh, cool. Well, and is there anything that you're working on next that you want to promote or anything that you have upcoming?
I'm working on the locals. I'm hoping something comes from there. I'm trying to do a couple of animated podcast type things.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, where I'm going to have one where it's in the future, the world is messed up and there's a girl robot that talks to the user about fan-made films and kind of just do like a critique of them and stuff like that. I have one for to be not to get too political, but it's the devil saying this is who I like today in the news. And just another one where just speaking out short stories that I wrote where he just sits there and talks to you, tells you the story. You see where those go. And I've also got that short story novel. I'm also working now on the breakdown for a werewolf movie I want to do called The Werewolf, not the movie, but a novel, Werewolf Chronicles, which just goes through four different people who are all intrigued into the same story, but from their different point of view leading to the end. So I'm working on a lot of things, but I don't think I have anything that's coming soon.
Okay. Awesome. Well, cool. Well, yeah. But, what was the last part?
A Watch Hunter. That's a good Hunter. One.
Yeah. Awesome. And that can be checked out on your website, or where can people find that?
Yeah. My website, YouTube, it's on private now because film festivals don't like it when it's on YouTube, but you can still see it on my website.
Okay. Cool. Fantastic. Well, it was fantastic talking with you, and everybody check out Jason's stuff and I wish you best of luck on your upcoming projects.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And if we ever find those movies, we will let people know. I just happened to. I could be like on my deathbed before I see that movie. I have no idea how long it's going to take to find it, but I will keep searching.
Yeah, me too.